Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
On the morning of July 9th, 1990, 22-year-old Princella Epps, a beloved daughter and sister, did not show up for work. This was highly unusual, so Princella's boss contacted her apartment complex. That afternoon, a maintenance worker was sent to check on her. Upon entering her apartment, he found Princella murdered in her bed. Almost immediately, her case went cold, leaving her family devastated and frustrated. It's been more than 34 years since Princella was killed, and investigators are still searching for the person responsible. Hey everyone, welcome back to Detective Perspective. My name is Derek Levasseur. I'm a licensed private investigator and former police detective, and each week I'll be covering an unsolved case in story format. I'll then give you my perspective on the investigation and provide contact information for the individuals or organizations connected to the case so that if you have any tips, you can contact them directly and maybe you can help solve a case. So if you're someone who's interested in true crime, specifically unsolved cases, and you would like to hear my opinion on those investigations, please consider subscribing, whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever platform you use. So a couple house cleaning things here. I can't get into it too much, but I had banked some episodes a while back, so this is really my first time in front of you guys since CrimeCon, and just a quick thank you to everyone who came out. We had a very large turnout, mostly there for Crime Weekly, but there was also a few of you who came up and said you were really enjoying Detective Perspective and what we're trying to accomplish here. So for everyone who came up and mentioned the show and talked about it briefly with me, I really do appreciate you, and we're only going to continue to grow from here and help as many families as we can. Now, I do want to mention before we dive into Princella's case that obviously every week my job is to spread awareness about these investigations, but our ultimate goal is to help solve these cases. So keeping that in mind, I want to be upfront and transparent with you guys that I will be omitting certain facts about this case at the request of the Atlanta Police Department. They have asked us not to mention them, and we're going to honor that because I would never want this show to be any way responsible for a case not going forward. So yes, it has been a very long time, but the family is in contact with the Atlanta Police Department, and we want to respect their wishes. So again, I'm going to do the best I can to give you the facts of this case without disclosing anything that may hurt the overall investigation. So now we can dive into Princella's case. And yes, it is an older investigation, but as I mentioned, it is still actively being worked. And as we go through the facts and circumstances of this case, I feel like many of you are going to start to develop an opinion on what you think happened based on what I can disclose. Having said that, I ask all of you to keep an open mind. The last thing we want to do is make the same mistake that investigators have made before us, which is to get tunnel vision, which is to focus in on one person or one theory and expend all of our resources on that theory just to find out that it's not the outcome we were looking for. So let's explore all the information. I will have some opinions at the end as well. And hopefully in the near future, I have an update on this investigation, and it's a positive one. All right, so I think we have everything out of the way. Let's dive into this week's case. Princella Yolanda Epps was born on March 31st, 1968, in Ohio to her parents Curtis Sr. and Mary Ann. She grew up in Springfield, Massachusetts with her older sister Kim and two younger siblings, Curtis Jr. and Ebony Joy. We actually had the honor of working with all of Princella's siblings, as well as her mother, Mary Ann, for this episode, so you will be hearing a lot from them as we go through the investigation. Now, Princella's family told us from the moment Princella was born, almost everyone called her Lady Bird or Bird, and to this day, her family still uses those nicknames. Here's Marianne talking about how this nickname came to be.
Those were some difficult times in having Bird. It was a hard labor, and I was even contemplating not keeping Bird. But see, at first they wouldn't let me hold the baby, because once you hold the baby, that's it. So I held her, and I couldn't do that. I couldn't let her go. So I'm glad that happened. I remember this lady that had just delivered also, and she was saying to me, what a beautiful baby. And that lady that was next in the bed towards me, she was some of the reason. It was like God just speaking, you know, look at her. And I was like, wow, little bird, little lady bird. So, but that's how Lady Bird came about. She was like a little tweet tweet bird.
Growing up, Princella was very close to all three of her siblings. Kim described Princella to Fox 5 Atlanta as outgoing and energetic. She was, quote, a who and loved people. She even helped Kim come out of her shell. Kim said people were drawn to Princella, and she was the glue that held the family together. Ebony described Princella as a, quote, defender and protector who would fearlessly stand up to neighborhood bullies or anyone else who messed with her family. One time, after Kim came home from college, Princella chased down a stranger who had stolen Kim's suitcase from their van. This ended up being Kim's favorite memory of Princella. Here's her talking about it.
I don't know why it's my favorite memory, but I will never forget I came home from college the first year. And those times, you got one suitcase, and it should have been big enough for you to have everything in that one suitcase. I went to Spelman College, and so their practice was you had to move out of the dorm, like take everything that you had brought with you, and then second semester, you go back. So this was the end of first semester. So it was December, and I had my suitcase, and for some reason, we didn't take the suitcase. When I got off the flight, the suitcase was in the van, and I don't remember why. I mean, maybe we needed a break. I'm not sure. We left the suitcase, and we all went into the house, and I remember we were watching TV, and all of a sudden, we heard the van's alarm go off. And before I could even realize what was happening, my sister Bird jumped into action. She was like a track star. She was jumping over fences, and she was after this young person who had stolen my one piece of luggage with everything that I owned in it out of this van. And he was going down the street with my piece of luggage. And she was chasing him down. And at some point, he realized that the weight of the luggage was too much for him. And he dropped it. And all of a sudden, here she comes back with this piece of luggage. Like, here you go. Here you go. And it was just a confirmation all over again of how she was taking care of business.
Yeah.
Not only was Princella courageous, she was also very thoughtful. Ebony remembered that Princella worked at a children's clothing store next to a Hallmark store, and sometimes Princella would stop by the store and buy pencils and other small treats just for Ebony.
She would bring home all this cool stuff like pencils and crafty bags, like the brown paper bags, but they're decorative with all these prints. She would always think about me, and I'm sure she thought about the others too, but me being the baby sister, her and Curtis did jack me up as the baby, but when she got a job, she did try to make up for those with bringing me things, treats and trinkets and pencils and things that I like, because I like to draw and I was very creative and imaginative. So she would help with those things, bringing items home from work that she thought I would like. So those are some of the fond memories I have with her.
Ebony and the rest of the family also remember Princella's love for baking and cooking as well.
She had this recipe called cheese squares that we still do to this day. And she had to have Land O'Lakes butter, and it had to be Duncan Hines cake mix, yellow cake mix for the base. So I have it ingrained in my head, but those memories of her baking, because she was a good baker and she loved chocolate chip cookies. That and drum legs, chicken drum legs, that was her thing. So I love for her to be home and bake cookies and to bring all of that cutesy stuff that she brought from work, and probably why I'm a crafter today because of that. So I would have to attribute that to her. So those are my fond memories of her.
And Curtis Jr. also shares a lot of the same fond memories as Ebony.
So my memories are pretty much the same thing. The baking, she loved the cookies, the cheesecake squares that we still do today. We try to make the cheese squares every Thanksgiving because that's what she always would do. So we try to continue that.
Now, aside from baking, Princella also loved art, journaling, and scrapbooking. Kim told Project Cold Case, quote, everything that she wrote in her journals, there was a picture to go along with it. She illustrated everything. Princella also loved poetry, writing it, reading it, and talking about it. Kim actually said that in her imagination, if Princella hadn't been murdered, she sees Princella finding a career in writing. But above all else, Princella loved Christ. She sang in the choir and studied the Bible. She was such a devout Christian that Mary Ann would use church as leverage to encourage young Princella to behave. By the late 1980s, Princella and Kim had both graduated from high school. Kim then moved to Atlanta, Georgia for college, which unfortunately meant that she didn't get to see Princella very often. However, Mary Ann visited Atlanta almost every weekend to, quote, keep an eye on Kim, and eventually she decided to move there along with Princella, Curtis Jr., and Ebony. After moving to Atlanta, Princella was uncertain about her career path. While figuring out her options, she helped a family friend set up a dry cleaning business and drove a horse and buggy carriage for tourists in downtown Atlanta. Then in the summer of 1990, now 22-year-old Princella decided to get her own apartment. She was really excited and things were starting to come together for her. And at the start of July, she moved into a studio apartment located in the 400 block of North Highland Avenue in Atlanta. Here's Mary Ann talking about Princella moving into her own place.
She was getting, helped her hang curtains, and she had good friends, and a lot of people were helping her. And that was during the time where this horrific situation came to the end, with people that she knew, people that she trusted and maybe shouldn't have trusted. And that was the apartment that she was in that she lost her life in. So that was her first apartment, but she was very pleased and happy and, you know, had so much to live for.
So there's a lot of the clips that we have from Princella's family, and they're all really great. And I think they drive home the point of how amazing of a person Princella was. And she had her whole life ahead of her. And from this point, the story starts to change and we're going to get into the actual crime. But before we do that, let's take our first and only break of this episode and we'll dive right into it. On Friday, July 6th, Princella was supposed to pick up 12-year-old Ebony. They had plans for Ebony to stay the weekend at Princella's new apartment, but Princella never came to get her. On Monday, July 9th, Princella's boss became concerned when she didn't show up for work. He contacted her apartment complex, and at around 3 p.m., a maintenance worker went into Princella's studio. Inside, he found her dead on her bed. She had been shot in the head. Princella's family was devastated when they learned about her murder. She was the glue that held the family together. She was their ladybird, and now she was gone. Kim later told Project Cold Case, quote, the world just got a little darker, and I didn't know how to process in the world without her. Her death was a tragedy. Here is someone so full of love and life, and at 22 her life was taken. It was traumatic. In addition to dealing with the loss of Princella, her family was also facing frustration with the Atlanta Police Department, who seemed uninterested in solving Princella's murder. They didn't talk to Mary Ann or give her any updates. This left her and the rest of the family in the dark about what had happened to Princella. At the time, all they knew was that she had been found shot in her apartment. They didn't know if there was any evidence found inside, who the police had interviewed, or if there were any suspects. Here's Mary Ann talking about her initial experience with the Atlanta Police Department.
I don't think they were very interested. I was a wreck. I wasn't able to do, a lot of things that maybe a person should have done. I was just, just a wreck behind that. But they never called. They never gave out any information. And when I did go to one of the precincts, they talked to me about some things, but it didn't seem like they followed through with anything. And I don't know if that's how it works. I don't know, but I just never heard from them. And I think at that time, it was really so much murdering going on. It was just so many murders that was going on in that area. And I just sort of said, wow, you know, maybe she wasn't that important. Maybe she wasn't, it wasn't that serious to her. It was just a number of things that were going on that they just allowed her to fall through the crack. Just didn't happen for Bird.
That clip is really tough to listen to, especially as a former law enforcement officer. I'm not going to make any excuses for it. I know she stated that there were a lot of murders happening at the time of Princella's murder. And you could say, okay, well, there's only a certain amount of detectives. They have to focus on the cases that have more evidence in them so that maybe they could solve those cases. But that's no excuse. I think everyone knows all these cases matter. They all involve real human beings with families and friends and people that care about them and people that will never be the same because of what happened. So each and every victim deserves the same amount of attention regardless of how many cases are going on. So there's really no justification for the lack of attention that was initially given to this case. If the Atlanta Police Department was overburdened with murders, they can ask for assistance via mutual aid, whether it's the surrounding jurisdictions, whether it's a federal agency. There is help available. A lot of it comes down to ego and the unwillingness to allow outside parties to come into the police department and help out. Just like anything, you do have human beings that are too prideful to ask for assistance. But in this particular case, I think Marianne's spot on. I think you had a lot of murders going on at the time, and there may have been certain murders that were more quote unquote solvable than others because of whatever facts and circumstances surrounding the case. So there was probably an initial investigation that was conducted loosely, and we're going to get more into that. And when there wasn't an obvious answer who committed the crime, they moved on from it. Or there was something else at play, and we're going to get into that very soon. Now, Princella's murder quickly went cold, leaving her family unsure of what to do next. The police weren't communicating with them, and to make matters worse, there was hardly any media coverage. In our research, we could only find one brief article from 1990, and that article spelled Princella's last name wrong, so clearly there wasn't enough attention put on this case. Years went by with no word from the police, and then in 2016, Ebony reached out to the Atlanta Police Department and asked them to reopen the investigation into Princella's murder. They agreed to review the case, but just like before, there was no follow-up. Still, the family was determined not to give up. In March of 2022, Kim retired and dedicated herself to solving Princella's murder. She launched a Facebook page where she posts pictures of Princella and shares memories of her sister. Kim also began speaking to the media about Princella's case. She told Fox 5 Atlanta that she feels it's her family's duty to keep Princella's memory alive in the community. Kim went on to say that she sees cases getting solved all the time, and she believes it's time for Princella's case to be solved as well. Kim also spoke to Crime Door TV, stating, quote, "I want people to remember that Princella is more than a statistic. She's more than a victim, a murder victim. She was our sister. She loved and was loved and is loved. I want people to know that we as a family will not stop working with the Atlanta Police Department until this case is resolved. The word that we use is closure. We want closure. We want closure for ourselves. I want closure for my mom. I want closure for my family, and I want closure for Princella. I want closure for Bird." Before 2022 ended, Kim and her family asked the Atlanta police to take another look at Princella's case, and again, they agreed. At that time, the police also shared what they had concluded after the 2016 case review. However, they didn't let the family see Princella's autopsy or any files, just a summary of the review. From this summary, the family learned new information about the original investigation in 1990. They found out that Princella's apartment had not been ransacked, and it didn't appear that anything was stolen. The police did find two condom wrappers, which led them to theorize that Princella knew her killer, or a sexual assault was the motive for her murder. DNA, fingerprints, trace evidence, and shell casings were also recovered from the scene, but further details were not included in the summary. The police did let the family know that the DNA had not been sent off for testing, which was obviously a huge surprise to them. I can't tell you why it wasn't sent off, because not only was I not there, but in my mind, there really is no good explanation. You know, we talk about it all the time with Criminal Coffee and how we're raising funds for dough cases and baby dough cases and DNA cases in general, but there's also a massive amount of rape kits that haven't been tested and thousands of cases where DNA has been collected and yet it hasn't been sent off due to resources, due to funding. From where I'm sitting, there's no reasonable excuse as to why you wouldn't send off a piece of evidence that could potentially solve a case. That's just my opinion, but I will tell you, not that I agree with this, the reasons that I just listed as far as lack of funding, lack of resources, too many items to send off and not being able to choose which ones to send, these are not things that I'm just making up. This is the reality of some of these cases. I have personally dealt with this where there has been multiple investigations, some of which I worked on breaking homicide, where there's 15 to 20 different pieces of evidence that could potentially contain DNA. And the lab comes back to the detective and says, hey, we can only test 3 or 4 pieces. We're inundated with evidence from thousands of other cases, and we just don't have the resources or the time to test all of your pieces of evidence. So pick, I don't know, 2 or 3 of them. We'll test them for you, and we'll let you know what we find. Now this detective sits there with this case that he or she is personally invested in now, and they have to basically make a guess at all the things that they have and hopefully pick the right 2 or 3 things, because if they don't, they may never get answers for the family. And it's just a terrible position to be in. And we really, as a society, as a justice system, have to find a way to change this. This cannot be the reason why these cases are not solved. So yes, I can sit here and relay the facts of this case to you, and I can give you some of the reasoning behind why certain things were not done, but in no way, shape, or form do I agree with that sentiment. I'm just giving you the reality of the situation. But again, that's why we're here. We're trying to change that. But that's all I'm going to say for now without getting too frustrated. We got to stay on this case. So additional information from the 2016 summary detailed how detectives spoke to several witnesses. One of the witnesses mentioned seeing Princella in the parking lot of her apartment building between 11 p.m. and 11:45 p.m. on July 6th. She was walking with her head down, accompanied by a man. This witness described the man as around 6 feet tall, with a slim build and dark skin. Now, this witness said hello to Princella, but she didn't reply, which struck them as odd because Princella was the type of person to always say hi. According to the case summary, detectives believe this witness was the last person to have seen Princella alive. Detectives also spoke to another witness who said they were watching a TV show on the night of July 6th. The show started at midnight on the 6th and ended at 1 a.m. on the 7th. The witness said that at some point during the show, they heard a single gunshot. Detectives went on to talk to other people who knew Princella, including one person who said Princella was dating 2 men when she was killed, but this person didn't know their full names. Now here's where the story really takes an unexpected twist. The summary went on to state that detectives also spoke with a police officer who claimed to have been with Princella in her apartment on July 6th, helping her hang curtains until around 10:30 p.m. Now when asked if he saw any condom wrappers in the apartment, the officer said no. In the 2016 case review summary, the Atlanta Police Department noted that the officer seemed to have a solid alibi, although specifics regarding this alibi were not provided. What wasn't documented in the summary was that years later, this same officer was arrested for domestic violence following allegations from 3 former partners who described instances of violence and death threats. These included disturbing incidents where he held a gun to their heads or even their mouths. He also told one woman that he could get away with killing her because he would be the one investigating the crime. Now, after these incidents became public, the officer resigned from the department and his officer certification was revoked. He later pleaded guilty to 2 misdemeanors, simple assault and simple battery. However, the officer successfully appealed the revocation of his police certification, claiming to have turned his life around by quitting drinking and embracing religion. His certification was then reinstated after receiving a letter of recommendation from a police chief. Now, I'm not going to go too far down this road. I don't know this person, but I'll tell you this right now. If you are convicted of a crime, especially domestic violence, and the allegations against you involve you threatening these individuals with a gun and stating that you could get away with killing them because of the position you are in, you should never, regardless of who you have become, regardless of what you have turned around, you should never be a police officer again. Once a person has displayed the ability to abuse the power that comes with being a police officer, they can never be allowed to be in that position again, period. Now, the last thing we know from this review summary is that the 1990 investigation was closed after no suspects were identified. The summary noted that detectives believe a, quote, extensive investigation would be needed to solve Prinsella's murder. But this extensive investigation never materialized, leaving the family frustrated once more.
So, once again, we're still waiting.
Right. And my thing is that they had DNA from the beginning. Yeah. Why is it taking you this long to run it? Like, it's just like
30 years.
Yeah. Just, you know, subpar work, subpar things that they could have probably closed out in the very beginning that just was left, you know, for us to come back and say, can you do your job? That should have been like the first thing. Protocol guidelines, that should have been the first thing to be done. So I just wish there were some better things in place for the families of the victims to get justice. And I do feel like even though it's not something that just happened yesterday, it's been 32 years, 33 years, maybe you should have a dedicated force that does this type of work to move it forward. Because to me, the older it is, the higher priority we should get to move it forward quickly. Like, people are passing away, people are moving in and out of the state. Like, we're losing traction here when you allow people to just go on with their lives and you're not following up on DNA that we could have captured somebody by now. Should have hit the ground. They should have hit it immediately. So we've lost years.
Yeah, there's not much more I can add here after that clip. Prinsella's family is absolutely right. There's no excuse for what transpired here. At minimum, it was just negligence. At worst, it could be a situation where we potentially have a cover-up. Without knowing all the details, I can't say for certain, but it is something that we have to consider when we think about the potential suspects that are involved in this case. Now, after learning all the new information from the 2016 case review, the family asked the lead detective on the case about testing the DNA. He said that it could be done, and in December of 2022, he informed them that he had sent the DNA for testing, with the results expected in 10 to 12 months. However, as time passed, the family received no updates despite reaching out to the detective multiple times. Then in early 2024, as we were putting this episode together, they received an email from a supervisor letting them know the detective was no longer handling the case and a new detective had taken over. When the family spoke with the new detective, they learned that the previous one had lied about sending the DNA off for testing. It had never been done. This meant that the family had been waiting over a year for results that were never going to come. Understandably, Prinsella's family was deeply hurt by what they learned. And as a former law enforcement officer, I can't justify this detective's actions. It's completely unprofessional, unacceptable, and just plain wrong. And I hope that this person was reprimanded for their actions. I can't understand why they would do something like this. The only thing I could think of is because Prinsella's family was being so persistent, this detective just got annoyed with them and to basically push them down the road for a while and to get them off his or her back, they lied to him just so they would stop calling. And that's why they said 10 to 12 months to just buy them some time. Maybe this person was getting ready to retire, or I don't know what the situation could have been. But regardless of the circumstances, it's terrible. And I feel so bad for Prinsella's family, and it's an absolute embarrassment for the entire law enforcement community. Now, with that being said, there is a silver lining here because the new detective has been forthcoming with the family and appears to be actively investigating Prinsella's murder. In fact, right before I recorded this episode, we received a call that the detective had secured a $10,000 reward and brought in at least one other agency to assist in the investigation. Princella's family shared that they are cautiously optimistic about these developments. They hope the detective follows through on what she says she's doing, but if it turns out that she isn't, the family will never give up their pursuit of answers in Princella's case. They are willing to do whatever it takes to move this thing forward. They want Princella's murder to be solved and for the appropriate people to be held accountable for dropping the ball on the initial investigation.
How do we make those accountable for missing that information? You know, who was in charge of the whole investigation? Like, well, we all said, it sort of dropped the ball on everything. So it's like, also, how do we make those accountable for that? It's just a number for them, but it was a family member for us, a loved one, a sister, a daughter. So how do we make those people accountable for that?
Yeah, this is a bigger question and a bigger problem that could take up an entire episode if we just wanted to talk about it. And overall, there's no perfect answer, but I think it starts with just better checks and balances. In law enforcement, when you have so many homicides taking place, you may have 10, 15, 20 detectives and maybe one supervisor. So each individual detective that's working on their own case kind of becomes their own boss. And when you have more seasoned detectives, their cases may not be monitored or reviewed to the extent that they should be. It's just assumed that they've done everything they could. And that just can't happen because regardless of how good of an investigator you might be, you're still human and you can make mistakes. And we always want to make sure that we're checking each other's work to ensure that all of our I's are dotted and our T's are crossed. But that's just surface level stuff. That's just basic things that should be done from day one. And that could just be the tip of the iceberg, especially when we're talking about this case specifically. There might be a lot more going on here. But yeah, those are just the basic things that have to be done in any job, not just investigations. You need to have someone who's coming in after you've completed your work and making sure that you've done a thorough job and you've exhausted all angles, all theories. And if that's not done, it's very easy for things to slip through the cracks. Now today, Kim, Curtis, and Ebony are all married with children, grandchildren, and even great-grandchildren. And Curtis believes that if Princella were still with them, she would be following the same path in life as the rest of her siblings. But tragically, Princella is no longer here because of someone else's actions. Yet she lives on through her family's memories. Not a day passes without them remembering their ladybird and the love and joy she brought to their lives with her vibrant personality and bright smile. Okay, so let's dive into the perspective. This will not be a long one, partially because I feel like we only have a limited amount of information, so I'm going to keep it specific to the facts that we do know. And as I said at the top of the show, there are some other things that I know that I could go into, but out of respect for the integrity of the investigation and the fact that this new detective is working it, I'm going to omit those facts and hopefully give that detective time to do what they need to do. So let's start with something that I mentioned in the show that I believe to be true, and that's the fact that Princella more than likely knew her offender and the crime was sexual in nature, or there was a sexual encounter with her offender before the murder occurred. And I say this because if the sexual encounter had occurred on a previous day, I think it's fair to assume that Princella would have picked up the condom wrappers. So it appears that those condom wrappers were specifically from the assault or the sexual encounter that happened right before her murder. And the only reason those condom wrappers were still there was because Princella was unable to pick them up and the offender forgot to take them. That's the only two explanations that I think you can come to from a commonsensical perspective. And you can make an argument for consensual or non-consensual sex, whatever angle you want to go with. You could say that the condoms were used by the offender because they didn't want to leave any DNA behind. You could also say that maybe it was common practice for Princella and the person she was with to have protected sex. And then for whatever reason, the encounter went south and that's when she was murdered. There's a real possibility that when the offender was with her, maybe the intent wasn't to kill her. Maybe something happened while they were together after they had sex that led to her murder. All of these theories, in my opinion, are viable. But regardless of where you fall, it still to me suggests that the person she had sex with and the person that killed her was definitely someone who was known to her. So let's explore that scenario really quickly. Could it have been a random person? We see all these crimes today where victims, specifically women, are living on their own in an apartment, and we later find out that their offender, the person who killed them, was someone who was not known to them. The individual just saw the victim going in and out of the apartment multiple times and just saw an opportunity to attack them when the victim maybe left their door unlocked, or maybe the offender approached the door, knocks, the victim opens the door, then the offender forces their way inside. I don't think that's what happened here. There doesn't appear to be any signs of a struggle. There's no indication from witnesses that they could hear something going on upstairs, some type of tussle going on before the gunshot. If there was someone who had been stalking Princella, they would have seen a man go in her apartment earlier that evening and maybe chose not to do whatever they were thinking about doing that night because someone else was present. And if we're to believe the police officer and that he's not involved, he was there until 10:30. So the window of opportunity for some random person to attack Princella is very small and highly unlikely. And I'll also throw out one other quick theory that maybe some of you are thinking, and that's the original witness testimony that said they saw Princella coming into the apartment building with a man. She had her head down, and when the witness said hello, she didn't say hi back. I can see an argument for someone who's looking into this to say, okay, maybe Princella's in the parking lot. Her offender approaches her there. Maybe they have a gun or a knife, and they say to her, hey, listen, we're going up to your apartment. If you say a word, I'm going to kill you. That may explain why Princella was acting the way she was when she encountered this witness. Is that possible? Sure. I have to say it because I have no information to rule it out definitively. I feel like there are stronger scenarios, but again, I'm throwing that on the table because if down the road we find out that that's the case, I would be very surprised, but at this point, anything's possible. So let's talk about the scenarios that may be more likely. And to start, we have to go over the timeline. What we know, if we're to believe everyone, is that this officer says he was with Princella until 10:30. He was hanging up curtains with her, and then he left around that time. Then Princella is seen around 11 p.m., somewhere between 11 p.m. and 11:45 p.m., walking in the parking lot back to her apartment with an unknown man. And again, as I just mentioned, the witness sees her, says hello. She doesn't say anything back. And then the next testimony that we have is from a witness who says between 12 a.m. and 1 a.m. on July 7th, they hear a single gunshot. So a very small window from the time that Princella is last seen to the time when this gunshot goes off. So more than likely, as police had alluded to, not only was the first witness the last person to see Princella alive, but more than likely, they saw her killer. That individual that they described was more than likely the person responsible for Princella's homicide. So who could that person be? We had that one scenario I just mentioned where maybe the police officer does leave, and while Princella is out in the parking lot, this offender approaches her and forces her to go back to her apartment where she's then sexually assaulted and murdered. I don't see that as the case, but I can't rule it out definitively, so we'll leave that one on the side for now. What I want to talk about right now is the police officer. First question I would have, and I think all of us have it, does this individual match the description given by the witness who saw the offender, the potential offender, with Princella between 11 and 11:45 p.m.? If he does, we're not off to a good start for the police officer. We also know that this police officer owned a gun. He admits to being with Princella within 1 to 2 hours of her murder. And we also know that we have this documented history of violence towards women where he has used a gun and threatened to kill them. And not only threatened to kill them, but that he could get away with it because of the position he was in as a police officer. So where do we go from here with the cop? Really simple. We got to send the DNA out. We got to also get his DNA and see if it matches. Pretty simple, right? If there's DNA that's found at the crime scene that the officers believe is connected to the murderer, well, then we have to enter it. We have to sequence it. We have to do everything we need to do and see, one, if it pops up in any databases. And if it doesn't, start matching it to potential persons of interest or suspects in the case. Obviously, one of them would be the police officer. Let's talk about his alibi real quick. There is a world where he does have a solid alibi. We don't have the specifics of the case, but I really think that needs to be vetted thoroughly. If there's something that definitively shows it's physically impossible that he killed Princella, then the family, at minimum, has the right to know that information, because as of right now, let's just call it what it is, it looks extremely shady. Now, moving on from the officer, we also have this other individual that Princella was dating. I'm hoping that they were able to identify this person, and if they were, the same questions apply. Does he match the description given by the witness? Where was he on the night of Princella's murder? What does his criminal history look like? Does he have an alibi? And then most importantly, does his DNA match the DNA found at the crime scene? The issue you will have here with both the police officer and this individual is more than likely they were both sexually active with Princella, so they do have a justification for why their DNA would be there, which could complicate the case if the prosecution was considering charging one of them. And that's really as far as I can take this one with what I'm allowed to say. But I do think we have a lot of information that we've covered here tonight, and you can use your imagination as to what the detective has right now so they can take it even further. And there's also a possibility that there are still witnesses out there that have not come forward, and that's why we're here. I'm going to recap the case, and maybe there's something that will jog your memory that could ultimately help solve this investigation. So, Princella Epps was last seen in the parking lot of her Atlanta apartment building on July 6, 1990, between 11 p.m. and 11:45 p.m. She was seen with a man described as around 6 feet tall, slim with dark skin. A gunshot was later heard between midnight and 1 a.m. If you have any information in this case, please call the Atlanta Crime Stoppers at 404-577-8477 or use the online form at crimestoppersatlanta.org. And like I mentioned earlier, there is a $10,000 reward and you may be eligible. And if you'd like to stay up to date with Princella's case, please join the Facebook group Princella Yolanda Epps Memorial. As I mentioned earlier, the family runs the Facebook page and I'm sure they would love your support. And my final words go out to Marianne and the rest of Princella's family. I just want to take a second to say on behalf of all of law enforcement that we are so sorry you went through this. This is an embarrassment of a case. And the fact that you're still willing to work with the Atlanta Police Department after what you've been through, after you've been lied to, shows the type of people that you are and that you will stop at nothing to solve your loved one's case. And I admire you. And I don't know if I'd be able to trust the process like you are willing to do, given the circumstances that you've been through. It's just incredible. And I'm absolutely floored by your ability to forgive and continue to move forward in spite of the setbacks that you've had, which should never be the case when working with a law enforcement entity. And yet here you are still fighting 34 years later. It's absolutely incredible and inspiring. I'm really hopeful that this case will be solved. There are avenues to explore, and the fact that we have DNA is promising. I just hope that this detective gets it right and really follows through on what she said she was going to do, not only for Princella's family, but for the entire community. And so I'm hoping that they make this wrong right by getting justice for Princella. And I'm hoping that I'm going to be here sitting right at this desk delivering the positive news to everyone who is now following this case. So until then, everyone stay safe out there, and I'll see you next week.